Dot is the September 23rd, 1999 edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. 2.5 hours of interviews, songs, stories, and general rigmarole from old Uncle Robert Norris, or Bathrobe Spear Robert, as I call myself on the air. Stay with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. Have a good time. Just to begin the show, we have another free radio broadcaster who's heading for, parts south. Hey there.
Hi, Robert. Yeah, I just want to let you and your listeners know that Adrian Rich is going to be at an event at CSU Monterey Bay at the Music Building at 7 o'clock as part of Mumia Awareness Week.
So she's going to be poetizing about Mumia?
And perhaps, all sorts of stuff. I'm not familiar with her work, so I'm looking forward to my first exposure.
Well, don't get beaten on the way down. I heard you talking about the troll busting and the beating of people last night on, I guess it was Vinny's show.
Yeah, safety in numbers. I actually got another call, so I'll let you go.
Hey.
And, pull her down, check it out.
Thank you, Badass Brian.
Stuff in San Francisco on Friday and Saturday.
All right, we'll talk more about that when you get back.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And, well, if you don't want to stay for our show, you can always, like Mayor Catherine Byers, hop in your red Jaguar and tool south to Monterey. We have a little seafood, check out Fisherman's Wharf, avoid the homeless people, and then check out Adrian Rich. It's a rich poet. Actually, I'm pleased to hear that she's doing it as a part of a benefit for the awareness for Mumia Abu-Jamal, who, as I'm sure our regular listeners are well aware, is currently facing potential death row, and a potential quick action on a death warrant, which actually surprised me when I heard about it a couple of days ago. The personnel apparently are a virtual rogues gallery of bad boy prosecutors and corrupt governors and nasty judges, and the whole thing sucks big time. And there you are. So, hey, what do we got happening for us today? Well, we have, even as we're speaking, there is a meeting going on of the Homeless Issues Task Force's Shelter Committee. I have the sad duty to tell you that the task force is proving to be the kind of task farce that I had feared it was going to be. Its last Monday meeting was farcical in the extreme, and I will be giving you a brief update on that. They've split up into subcommittees, and one of them is meeting today. I guess they have four areas of expertise. One is shelter, one is services, one is civil rights, and one is sort of leftovers. And sometimes it's good to have subcommittees that actually pound things together and get them done. And I've got no problem with that, and I'd like to see that process happening. But what I'm seeing now is people obsessed with the process instead of doing kind of quick, clear actions that they can take. They're sending things off to committee. They're denying people access to the agenda. They're spending great amounts of time debating things like, are the minutes correct? And they're getting obsessed and entangled in the process, perhaps the same way, for those of you who attended the Steve Argue travesty, or some call it trial, that happened this week, where activist Steve Argue was convicted of punching a cop, convicted for a felony of punching a cop in defense of a woman at the May 22nd protest, and that their famous picture, which has been published in the Sentinel, and many of you may have seen in Santa Cruz, of a police officer just wrenching the hand of a woman with a baby, I should say, a five-year-old child. Her partner, Almond, had the baby, two-year-old, and he was also attacked and set upon by the police, targeted for arrest. Instead of the juries even considering the totality of events around the protest, they debated for an hour and a quarter, pretty much had made up their minds when they came into the jury room, didn't ask to see the videos again, didn't even look at them, and just it was guilty, guilty, guilty. And I think part of that was, and we talked to some of the jurors after this affair, some of them stayed around. They looked really genuinely troubled. For me, the women had tears in their eyes, and they felt they had no choice because they were kind of wrapped up in solving this little problem that the district attorney and the judge, Judge Robert Adak, District Attorney Tony Allen, and indeed Defense Attorney Ben Rice, certainly what Judge Adak had told them to go do, which was simply to do a little bit of thinking about whether this particular incident was rose to the level of excessive force and therefore could be considered to be justifying Steve's behavior. That is to say, whether Officer LaFaber was using excessive force in his arrest so that Steve Argue and reasonably could have gone in defense of others, punched LaFaber to get him off of Julianne and so forth. And the one juror said that if Steve had stood his ground after the punch, he would have been surrounded by officers and no doubt set upon by officers and perhaps shot by officers. That was his fear. I don't know how accurate that is, but considering what's been going on in San Jose and what has happened in Santa Cruz, in San Jose there have been eight shootings and seven fatal killings by the police this year. Murders is what some are calling them. Certainly fatal shootings. And in Santa Cruz, of course, we had the Happy John Dine killing by Officer Connor Carey, who we don't know if he received any disciplinary consequences for that fatal November 1997 shooting of the innocent and innocuous Happy John Dine, who was, of course, found with a toy gun. They're always found with something, you know. I mean, in L.A., they were found with... The guy was seen with sunglasses. Actually, it wasn't L.A. It was Monterey recently. One of those San Jose cop shootings. San Jose cops traced this guy and went after him in some burglary charge. They pursued him with guns onto the freeway, and they shot him as he was running away because they thought he had something in his hand that was silvery. It was a pair of sunglasses. It turned out to be Happy John Dine was shot because he had a toy gun on him, but the question was never really dealt with by any independent investigatory body as to whether he actually was wielding that gun. All the non-police witnesses said he was not. And afterwards, one of the officers, Carey's partner, over, was seen by two or three witnesses as pulling something out of Dine's backpack, or fanny pack, I should say, and throwing it on the ground. People were wondering if maybe that was sort of the Santa Cruz equivalent of throwing down the gun after the man is shot. It's a serious accusation to make against Officer Over. It was never proved either way, but it was never investigated, and that was the problem. And that is the problem here in Santa Cruz. This trial was rushed forward. They sought a continuance. That was really one of the first blunders, I should say, the first indications of partiality by Judge Adak. I've called him Artichoke Heart Adak in the past because of his actions to mandate jail for serving free food for Soup Without a Permit activist Sandra Loringer, an antique merchant and homeless activist back in 1989 in the summer, in a case that shocked the city and actually was reported far away in newspapers across the world. Literally appeared in several Indian newspapers, that's in India, on the front page, the Adak's decision there. Anyway, Adak was the judge, a bad judge to leave in place, and that we can to some extent blame Steve Argue for that because he allowed that judge to stay in place. But one wonders when Ben Rice got on the case why Ben didn't disqualify him. That's the pro bono attorney. We're going to hear a long interview today with Steve Argue about what went wrong in the trial and I'm always I'm quick to jump on behavior by attorneys in our local courts, even defense attorneys, that I think is not just so much as an behavior that's an error, but entrenched elitist behavior where an attorney assumes a kind of mantle of omniscience and takes control of the situation to the detriment of the client, both because it's generally a bad thing to let attorneys control cases, and also in this, in particular cases where attorneys are, you know, are supposed to be responding to the wishes of their clients and in fact are simply dictating to the clients, and they're acting really as a part of the vicious system that they're supposed to be helping the clients get out of. And I guess in their own way sometimes they think they're doing the right thing, but in political cases it's particularly important for attorneys to pay a lot of attention to what their clients want and what their clients' supporters want, because some of the motivation for the trial may be to further political action down the road, and attorneys have to realize this and to some extent temper their rather narrow legal training for that purpose. And you're going to hear a lot of talk about, a lot of analysis of why the problems that Ben Rice, who was the attorney, had in that regard. So it's I'm kind of wandering all over the map. I began talking about the Homeless Issues Task Force. As I say, its subcommittee is meeting today, probably over by now. It started meeting at 4:30 at the, I think it's Page Smith Community House. Let me ask my producer about that. Yeah, she confirms that. Which is the place out at Homeless Services Center with all those trailers at Highway 1 and Highway 9, that multi-million-dollar trailer project that they spent so much money putting together that helps 40 people. I'm glad it does help 40 people, but it swept away a campground that was helping between 100 and 200 people, so sometimes even more, and of course was a scandal, and people were shooting up drugs there, and there was all kinds of bad things happening there. And now, of course, all those things are happening. They're just not happening in a visible place. They're happening in places where people are at greater risk, and of course are getting beaten up by little gangs of thugs called Trollbusters, who have, I'm sure our regular listeners know, been on the prowl big time for the last 2 days. Four or five beatings in the course of one night, the night before last, and we're hoping to actually get on the phone one of our a member of the Homeless Issues Task Force. Her son was beaten by Trollbusters on the way home, and those of you who heard Vinny's show last night on Free Radio Santa Cruz know that two homeless activists, Wilma and Ben DeHarlingue, if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, were also beaten, probably by the same group of white kind of punk skinheads. They called them Nazi skinheads. There was some question as to what their orientation was, and you heard the discussion, I think, last night of how they were. There was a confrontation in the discussion between one of the skinhead assailants and the folks who were beaten. They kind of in a march that was essentially a kind of a "we're not giving up" protest put on by supporters of Steve Argue and the Santa Cruz Five after the Attic verdict, which, as I said, was a real disgrace. And now I'm at last recovering my train of thought. What the jury did in that case, Argue case, was like the Homeless Issues Task Force. It got obsessed with process and detail, and it became subservient to and deformed by the mandate that it thought it had, instead of remembering the broader objective, the more fundamental objective. For the Homeless Issues Task Force, the fundamental objective is to make sure homeless people aren't getting beaten, getting arrested, to deal with institutional injustices really quickly as they can, and to recognize that really they're simply a sounding board and a prod for the what is right now a reactionary city council majority, a city council majority that has no interest in basic human rights for homeless people, such as the right to sleep, and that. That puts the Homeless Issues Task Force in a difficult position, but there are a majority of activists there. They can start passing one resolution after another if they want in a clear and specific way. And I've brought them at least a dozen resolutions that are pretty well documented, easy to pass, and they have not been able to pass one. And they've gone, I think they're in their fourth or fifth, maybe even their sixth meeting, if you count the various subcommittee meetings they've been having. And they're just not doing it. They're spending their time arguing about details. They're spending their time engaging in little kind of ego fights. We're actually hopefully going to get a call in, my producer tells me, from a man who's been working on this issue very intently and intensely. Recently, he's proposed a hate-free zone initiative in Santa Cruz, and he was behind the sleeping ban repeal initiative of last year and the year before, and the what I call sleeping ban repeal junior, a more limited initiative this year, which quite hasn't been published because of lack of funding. We may actually have him coming in on the line now. Let's go to the phones and see if we can get an update. Actually, there is a call coming in, so hang on.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hi, Uncle Robert.
Hey, it sounds like David Silva to me.
Yes. You might also remember that besides working on this hate-free zone initiative most of this summer, that the very first meeting of the Homeless Issues Task Force, myself and Peter Eberle were calling for a community alert on hate crimes against the homeless. I don't want to point fingers at who's doing what at that Homeless Issues Task Force, but
it's not polite to point.
It's what's dude. Not being done that, of course, is the issue.
Right.
So I forgive you.
Thank you. You're giving me the finger, and then you're forgiven. I appreciate that.
But
well, I'm glad to say I'm not on the Homeless Issues Task Force.
One of the things I haven't heard your show until just a couple minutes ago. I was.
It just started.
So I think people have to get is that, you know, these skinheads and these Aryan types, you know, now that they're like also computer literate and trained to be in these operative cells, either targeting squads or operating cells, you know, they're pretty savvy on what not to say. But if you listen carefully, you can hear what they're after. You know, they'll refer to a hate crime victim as a victim. And so just to accuse someone of a victim is part of their modus operandi. Instead of saying nigger or saying faggot or saying, you know, a homeless bum, hobo, you crip, you know, whatever target they're going after, they're going to be savvy now and just calling you a victim.
One of these
incidents that happened is that the person was identified as appearing to be homeless, and that was one of the incidents. I don't know if you reported all three.
I haven't actually gone through the.
Oh, okay.
There are actually more of them. There are four and actually five incidents.
I've only got confirmation of three myself for this week. There were a few last week too. You know.
Well, why don't you? I was actually going to ask you to talk about something else, but this is a very immediate and important topic. Why don't you give us a summary of the incidents you've heard about, and also have you been in contact with the police department? But talk about, why don't you give us an overview of the incidents?
Well, I'm focusing on community response, and I want the DA's office to get on board and being able to cooperate with the Santa Cruz police in terms of identifying hate crimes. That, to me, I think the pressure needs right now to be on the county, and let's just see if the city police can actually do some real police work here. So what I'm focusing on is community response. I'm just begging and begging on knee. Here I am on one knee now. Everybody, I'm begging for people to start showing up, because we are like only a quarter of the way through with the signatures on the Hate Free Zone initiative, and we only got 2 months left. We have a Hate Free Weekend coming up October 2nd and 3rd, which is going to be in conjunction with the Common Action. It's also going to be in conjunction with the Hillel activity up at the university, and we're having a kickoff thing Saturday afternoon for students, and then we're coming back down and joining Common Action, and we're going to be doing some neighborhoods. But this weekend, Saturday, that's a weekend after next. This weekend, Saturday at noon, we're asking people to congregate the back porch of the Loudon Nelson Center. We need people that are walkers that can actually carry the petition door to door. We have been invited. In fact, they begged. The Near Lagoon Co-op Board has begged us to come in and put those signatures in there. So I need help. You know, I'm not exactly feeble, but I'm not able to walk much. We are starting to get in. People are starting to turn in their petitions. That's a real good sign.
Talking about, of course, the hate-free
zone initiative. I mean, it's basically, you know, if we can't take a stand, you know, what are we going to organize about? You know, you can sit sit and organize for a long, long time, but we need to start standing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the community as a whole needs to take a stand. I realize this means we have to maybe hold our nose with some of the alliances we have to make. I'm sure that Daryl Darling and Keith Sugar don't like being on the same side on this issue. I'm sure there's a lot of people in town don't like being on the same side on this issue, but we are under assault. And if this community is not going to stand up for its disabled, not stand up for its gays, not stand up for its Asians, not stand up for its seniors, not stand up for those that are easily targeted, then what are you doing? What are you organizing about?
My concern about this is sort of like the concern I felt when I went to the town clock a year ago and I saw Mark Tracy and Steve Belcher talking about hate crimes, when I know that the individuals that they employ in their department are in essence hate criminals. And so I have a real trouble with authorities, who are pushing these what I call cosmetic measures.
And I don't think we should let up. I don't think we should let up. Well, I don't know if those authorities are not pushing cosmetic measures. They didn't write this. They've joined on and said yes, they think that this is a good thing. So we have them on board as supporting that. Let's just let that go at that. Now, when it comes to police brutality, hey, I'm a victim of police brutality. I'm going to court here,
Right, we keep hoping to see you in court.
Yeah, well, you will be
3 years later, David.
Yeah, it's November 1st is my trial date.
Oh, right. Well, we're going to be there.
Well, thanks a lot.
Hey man, we'll be there to tamper with your jury.
Dress like police officers wearing swastikas.
Indeed, definitely.
I don't know, but whatever.
This trial is
a civil suit.
This is a civil suit that'll be happening in San Jose. Yeah. Is that accurate? And this is, of course, concerns the fact.
No, this is not accurate.
What's not accurate?
But I'm just saying that I'm a victim of police abuse too, and I've seen a lot of police abuse, and I've fought a lot of police abuse, and I've in Hollywood, L.A., Fresno, and here, I've been fighting against police abuse. But when it comes to Nazis and hate groups, either being birthed in our community or invading our community as marauders. Either way, we need to take a stand. And unfortunately, that for some of us, it's really kind of hard to stand united. But we have to do that, Robert.
It depends on who you're uniting with and for what purpose. And I tend to agree with you.
Yeah, there are common coalition items that we can stand.
Sure, and whether
The community needs to get its heads out of the sand.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, it's always good to get your head out of the sand. In fact, we were talking last night on free radio. Some of us were talking. I don't know if you heard the free radio show last night, but the victims of some recent beatings called into the show and talked about, what they thought can be done. I mean, they don't trust the police department as being an effective agent of stopping this kind of thing. What's your feeling? Are they an effective agency here?
They're being an effective agency compared to the district attorney right now, and they're being an effective agency. I'm always going to be watchful and apprehensive that the police just don't simply latch onto hate crimes. This hate-free zone is not about in creating more new hate crimes or even the hate crime argument, whether there should be hate crimes or not. But I am very, very leery, of course, of any police department using something as a way to add more time on youth sentences. Let's say they just simply are going to start targeting youth that they think are dressing too punk. If they start doing that and they start using this as an excuse, of course, I'm going to be very watchful of that. But right now, we are in an emergency, and if our police are going to be helping us, then let's work with them. Now, I can understand someone not going, and I completely will not pressure anybody to turn themselves into the police department. With this kind of initiative, this kind of community response, one of the things you do create is you create safe space, and you create networking so people know that there's someone they can go to report these things. One of the problems we've had in the past is that victims are always made to feel that they're the guilty ones. Even by their friends, they say. Somebody will say, "Well, what did you do? Mm-hmm. You were flirting. What? That seems to be always part of our culture, and we have to stand up and start changing."
Seems to me the question is, what do you do for self-defense? I mean, you have a situation that is where people, this gang of roving skinheads, is running around beating up people right and left.
Well, and for the whole community to stand around and gawk is not exactly the right thing.
Well, what do you think should be done, David, in the next 24 hours? Let's say. What any suggestions for us here?
Yeah, in the next 24 hours, I want everybody to rest and be ready to walk Saturday at 12 noon. No, I don't have any immediate solutions to anything like
that. We're talking about self-defense here.
See, I cut into the middle of your show without hearing what you were talking about, Robert. So I've got a call that you were talking about hate crimes, and so I cut in. Now, I'm missing something. What are you talking about in the next 24 hours?
Well, I'm just saying...
I'm talking about, David,
take a breath.
I'm
talking about the fact that, that there have been a series of sequential assaults on people in the last 48 hours by the same group of people, and as far as I know, maybe I'm wrong, no arrests.
Right.
And the police know who these people are.
Do they?
My suspicion. Well,
yeah. I know who the best witness is. The best witness is probably the guy that was inside that liquor store and closed the doors. He probably got the best look at everything.
Let's tell the audience what we're talking about. We're of course referring to an incident where two homeless, well, the two activists who also are concerned about homeless affairs and other
one Asian.
Two individuals, a tall man named Ben and a shorter fellow named Will, were set upon. Actually, they came to the defense of a Chicano man and an African American man, who appealed to them. They were being attacked by a group of young white skinhead guys who were hanging near the liquor store at Laurel and Pacific Streets.
Yeah.
And what happened was they did enable the black guy and the Chicano fellow to get away, but they themselves were set upon and beaten by these youths. I don't want to say kids because they're, you know, old enough to start beating people up. They're no longer kids.
Where was the rest of the people on the street?
And the rest of the people on the street, according to the two people being beaten and a woman watching, who I talked to personally yesterday, were doing nothing. And
there's a lot of fear, and this is mostly about fear.
And of course, I think what I would advise people to do. I mean, I've been pursued by people intent on violence. I immediately walk into the middle of the street and start shouting loudly. I mean,
that's my tactic.
Right.
You bet.
And if you see that happening to someone else, you do exactly the same thing. You shout.
Yeah.
They start following you. You run further into the light, and you draw them off into well-populated areas
exactly.
where there are other people, and you continue to shout.
Very good.
That's the best thing to do.
Yeah, that's what I do too.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it happens to me often, but it'd probably be happening to me more often.
Yeah. Let me ask you, David, since you did get to the Homeless Issues Task Force shelter meeting today?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't.
My lower
back went out, and I just couldn't walk over there.
I hear you.
I will have a car soon.
Well, that's good. I know, if you remember, we're not too far from you now, living-wise, so perhaps we can all do a little, you know, carpooling, if necessary, on occasions.
If you behave.
I will try.
Yes.
And is there more you want to talk about and things coming up in the next few days that we should know about?
Well,
you say the Saturday there's going to be a walk in favor of a hate-free zone to petition for that purpose.
Now there's walkers to carry petitions.
And where will that be? Where will that start? At what time?
The back porch of Loudoun Nelson Center at noon.
Okay. And if people want to do that beforehand, I know that you had a kind of a lonely vigil today at City Hall waiting for some help.
It wasn't terribly lonely. I had a few people, and I got 10 petitions out again. I mean, this Saturday one-hour thing, you know, it gives people time to come in on their lunch hour. It was much better last week because I guess the hate crimes last week were much more trustworthy or something than this unsolved ongoing thing happening this week. Every Thursday from noon to one in front of City Hall, people can pick up petitions or turn in the petitions. If you have a petition, you've had it more than 2 or 3 weeks, turn it in and get a fresh one.
You're also carrying the rent control petition.
Yeah, I always have the rent control petition with me.
And I guess the sleeping ban junior, as I call
it, sleeping ban junior is as yet to be published.
But it's still, of course, we have the camping ban senior coming out of the home.
Camping ban senior may just make sleeping ban junior irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to the city clerk today, and she was wondering about the sleeping ban junior, and she said, well, you know, you can refile your notice of intention, and your time starts all over again. So that's nice to know, but we don't want to kick a special election necessarily.
Right. Well, is there more? Do you want to say on this, or shall we? Let's take a break.
Let me hear what other news you have, Robert. Because you know, I've been like getting my phone's been ringing off the hook with you know. I found out about the about one event from the, you know, Victory Over Violence Buddhist people, and I found another event from Homeless Issues Task Force. And you know, just like I'm hearing these things from different sources. Let's hear what you've accumulated, okay?
Sure. And if we don't give you all the details that you know about, please get back to us.
Sure thing.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
We're going to take a brief musical break, and then we will encourage you to call in if you have been the victim of, or heard of, or seen of any particular assaults recently in the last couple of weeks, in the last couple of months, or if you want to talk about this subject. This is, of course, the most immediate and violent kind of destruction of basic civil rights for poor people and homeless people on the streets. Or anybody on the streets, actually. Let's talk about that, but let's take a breather here.
A company up in Washington State was spraying 2,4-D. Their program hit a snag, it seems, when the community began to have some problems when they tried to procreate. So the company sent a chemist there to set the record straight. She said,
babies are replaceable, that's the bottom line. Compared to weeds, a birth defect is clearly quite benign. We scientists are confident we'll take this all in stride. Oh, babies are replaceable and spraying herbicide.
These folks were not so happy with the company's attitude. Such utter disregard for life is criminal and crude. A dozen pregnancies that year, but only one survived. Still, the company stood behind its claim that no one was deprived, 'cause
babies are replaceable, that's the bottom line. Compared to weeds, a birth defect is clearly quite benign. We scientists are confident you'll take this all in stride. For babies are replaceable when spraying herbicide.
The company's public relations man was summoned to the cause. He said, our spraying practice does not violate the laws. The chemist's words don't constitute a legal ground to sue. She's speaking from a strictly scientific point of view.
Oh, babies are replaceable,
that's the bottom line.
Compared to weeds, a birth defect is clearly quite benign. We scientists are confident
we'll take this all in stride.
For babies are replaceable when
spraying herbicide. Now women can have children anytime they feel the call. The magnitude of impact here is really rather small. If your pregnancy's preempted, why, you'll have another chance. But plan around our schedule, please, we've gotta spray these plants. Yes, babies are replaceable, that's the bottom line. Compared to weeds, a birth defect is clearly quite benign. We scientists are confident you'll take this all in stride. For babies are replaceable when spraying herbicide.
Yes, babies are replaceable, that's the bottom line. Compared to weeds, a birth defect is clearly quite benign. We scientists are confident you'll take this all in stride. For babies are replaceable when spraying herbicide.
And that was Mark Levy from his 1989 album, Babies Are Replaceable. Actually, it's a mid-80s album. Take Off Your Clothes by Mark Levy. A fine song and a fine notion, I might add. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And got a lot of interesting interviews coming up tonight. But again, there is a crisis in the community right now. I've talked about the crisis of people sleeping and being arrested for it, the crisis of people being beaten by troll busters at night because they have no safe place to go. Women can't file complaints with the police because they're afraid of their camping tickets being called up. They can't sleep in numbers where they'd be safer or in well-lit places. All this, of course, is as true as it ever was. But what we have in addition to this is, in the last 48 hours, five cases of beatings. And that includes the two people that I mentioned. You've heard me and David Silva talking about at the liquor store at I guess it's Benito's Liquors, is that the name? At Laurel and Pacific, the night before last. It includes 3 hours before, 2 hours before that. That happened around midnight on Tuesday midnight, Wednesday morning. Then on the same evening, a couple hours before, the son of a local woman was beaten as he walked through past Loudon Nelson Park for no good reason. He was just called a victim, kicked, his glasses broken, his books thrown to the ground, his CD smashed, his nose broken. He was pummeled and chased, rock thrown at him. I got a call from a homeless woman that I'm going to, I may be able to play for you on the line about her experience with a beating, a rock thrown at her. Then we had when the two victims from the liquor store, and we were outside the liquor store and trying to defend the Asian and the Chicano man, when one of them went to the hospital with a broken nose, compliments of this young gang of troll busters, skinheads, punks, he found that there had been several prior assaults that night from a similar gang, according to the personnel out of Dominican Hospital. So that, I count five in a 24-hour period. And of course, in today's Sentinel, you read of another beating, which what sounds like may have been the same gang of skinheads last week. So it's really, it's strange the police can't seem to get a handle on this. and I don't know. I'm going to, well, let me tell you what happened the other night. To take a breather from all that, but you can, and please call in if you have any thoughts on this or if you have any information, or if you're, you know, a person who beats up people and you want to talk about why you do it and, you know, the thrill you get from, you know, kicking someone in the ribs. I guess, you know, you have to have a, well, I mean, let's talk about this. Let's get into it. I got a call the other Tuesday night from Scott Graham, and we're going to hear, hopefully, an interview with him about what's happening at the city council or the shitty council level, for those who are not so sanguine about that, our local legislative body. And city council was having a meeting on Tuesday night. It was one of their special meetings. They have regular council meetings second and fourth Tuesdays, and then on alternate Tuesdays, they've been having sort of special meetings. And at special meetings, in spite of the fact that the city council handbook doesn't really have a clear prescription on this, and I believe Christopher Crone brought this up, they've been denying the public a public comment period. And in denying the public comment period, for the first time ever, Chris Crone, I was told by Scott Graham in this phone call the other day, was going to move that there be a public comment period for a period of time. And he apparently had thought that, you know, with the new city council majority, Byers, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, the three of them elected at the last election for greater public process and greater public participation, that would have no problem in passing. We would begin to see a new era where there would be a gradual or perhaps even hopefully a more immediate expansion of public process so that the people who want to bring issues before the council really have a mechanism for doing it. Now, public comment isn't really a big deal. You get to sound off for half an hour, big deal, and it's not really access to the agenda. Now, in some cities, people have access to the agenda. Santa Barbara, for instance, or Santa Monica, individuals can put items on the agenda, and then the city council can tell them to go take a dive in the lake. They got to get a motion and a second, but at least the issues can be presented. It's not true in Santa Cruz. In beautiful Democratic People's Republic of Santa Cruz, you don't have that power. So we're going to play in a moment after we take this latest phone call coming in what happened on Tuesday night when I got to city council when Chris Crone tried to make a motion and did make a motion for extending oral communications.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
No, my heart bleeds for you.
This is David Silva again.
Yeah, I just one thing more I wanted to
oh,
add.
You just had one more thing, didn't you?
Yes, I'm sorry to interrupt your agenda.
Yes. But we'd like to put other people on the agenda as well.
The Harvey West area.
Consider this your public comment.
The Harvey West Area Association put out its September newsletter to all the residents and workers and
fellow bigots.
Businesses that are in that area.
Right.
And did you see a copy of that?
I did not.
They refer to Nancy Anacito as this hero who has been willing to take on the horrible job of fighting off this thing that was created by the city council called the Camping Ban Task Force. They refer to it, and they say that their basic purpose is to legalize sleeping on lawns, streets, in your backyard, with little or no regards to the normal sanitary facilities. But we have sent Nancy there to try to stop them. I mean, this is the editorial, and this is an extensive.
So Nancy is the turd in our punch bowl. So
yeah. Well, Nancy, if Nancy went there September 15th and actually didn't correct this stuff, then what Nancy did is probably inflamed the most inflamed neighborhood in this community, which probably does produce skinheads that probably do beat up. As a matter of fact, this neighborhood association has actually bragged of tearing up tents and kicking homeless people out of areas and actually hurting a county employee. So if they can brag about that in front of the police and not be questioned, it's no wonder that they actually
David,
have the
they were the most militant, as I remember, and you and I attended at least one of their meetings during the Catherine Byers' bogus camping ban ordinance examination task force back in the winter, and they were asking for increased enforcement of the camping ordinance and the sleeping ban.
Yeah.
And, you know, I note, by the way, Nancy.
Oh, there are also
Hang on a second, dude. Nancy Acevedo, by the way, did not attend the latest meeting of what is not.
She's not a resident there.
Which is not, of course, the camping. We don't call it the camping task force. It's the homeless issues task force, which really is, as I've said before, a task force. And we, you and I may disagree on this, but it isn't primarily concerned with the camping ordinance at all.
This newsletter is loaded with all this information that very, very inflammatory. And for people that already acted out against homeless people, for Nancy Anacito, who is on this committee representing the city, by the way, to be participating in this inflammation at a time when we're having hate crimes against homeless people, I think should be called into question very seriously. I think that there's something seriously wrong in that area.
Maybe you can give her a call. Find out what she thinks.
No, I can't give her a call.
Oh, no, really?
No. You got a number?
I think I can find it for you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Give it to me later.
I will, and I think it's very interesting. Again, at the last
At the last
Homeless Issues Task Force meeting, which was on Monday, she did not show up, and she didn't show up at the previous subcommittee meeting, which was designed to, I guess, trim down, and get together the camping ordinance for repeal for presentation to the city council.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be talking further about the Homeless Issues Task Force later.
Well, when you get to talk about it, know that the Harvey West Area Association is characterizing it as loaded with wild-eyed radicals, and that only Nancy Anacito will save us all from.
Don't forget Peter Eberle; he's our man.
Yeah.
Downtown Association.
This is really quite amazing. I didn't realize that something that's put out by businessmen and corporations would actually have this much hate contained in the
literature. I'll have to get a copy of that. Thank you for calling in.
Sure thing. Bye.
And we are going to be talking more about the. Round the rosy merry-go-round, endless discussions at the Homeless Issues Task Force that happened on Monday, and that hopefully maybe we can get a report, maybe we can get our producer on the line calling around to see who might have made it to the subcommittee meeting today on shelter. I mean, shelter is the key issue. You have for the winter, right now you have places for less than 5% of homeless people, and that's bad enough, but of course what you have at the same time is a law is criminalizing homeless people both in the city's sleeping blanket and camping bans, plus you have the county ordinance which bars sleeping in vehicles unless you are engaging in emergency roadside resting as a motorist going through, which empowers sheriff's deputies to harass you if you're on any public right-of-way, which really takes care of most public property. And it's really a difficult situation for people throughout the county. That's thousands of homeless people we're talking of who are criminals every night. And, excuse me, that's what the Homeless Issues Task Force should be dealing with and supposedly was dealing with tonight at its shelter subcommittee. But I fear that that's not going to be dealt with, that they're going to be engaging in a series of ego clashes, activities. They're not going to be dealing with it. At least they haven't thus far. And I would love to be proved wrong, and I'm going to hope that that happens, but I'm really pessimistic, and I'll be giving you a report. But I actually would like to... I have a whole tape of the Homeless Issues Task Force meeting from Monday, and I don't really think any of it is really worth playing. That's the thing. I sat through... It was a three-hour meeting. They actually had a new Homeless Issues Task Force member, Lucy Kimmitzer, whose son, by the way, was beaten by these trollbusters two nights ago. And I think that that she's made that public. I believe that's been made public. She's writing a story for the Sentinel on the issue, which hopefully will be appearing this weekend. That hadn't come up by that task force meeting, but what she wanted to do was she wanted to introduce a couple of simple resolutions, a resolution that the task force supported, a person to go to the courts and observe how homeless people are being treated in the courts, and possibly to kind of sit with homeless people in solidarity as they go through these endless court processes where they're criminalized for such things that ordinary people are not criminalized for, like opening a beer. Even if you're not drinking, it's called open container, and you can be given a $162 ticket. They're criminalized for sitting down on the sidewalk. If they're next to a shop, they're criminalized, of course, for sleeping, covering up with blankets. They could be criminalized, like I received a ticket on Friday for sitting on the base of a public statue, even though it looks like it's an area to sit on. And, of course, they can always shuffle along when the police tell them to move, and I suppose that's often the best course of action for someone who wants to avoid contact with the police in that way. I didn't shuffle along. I got a ticket. I'm going to be fighting it in court. And who knows? I'd like to see it fought on the streets. I don't mean fought with guns and knives. I mean fought with endless numbers of other people sitting down and saying, no way, change these laws. You don't. It's not appropriate for you to pass anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz. That might have been something that Mayor Coonerty favored, that Mayor Rotkin favored. It was something that Mayor Byers, when she was a council member in her more liberal days, voted against. She was the one vote against the sitting ban back in 1994. So it's too bad that now that she has a majority to change these laws, assuming that Fitzmaurice is not a complete fizzle, as some now call him, Fizzle Morris, that could happen. So I guess maybe I should wind up the Homeless Issues Task Force before going on to the subject I was talking about before, which is the special city council meeting that I was telling you I went to, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. The Homeless Issues Task Force is broken up into subcommittees, and later on in the show I'll tell you when and where those committees are meeting. In fact, I probably could tell you now. I believe I have an actual record of that, and I can give you some quick information for those of you who are interested. There was a meeting of the Shelter Subcommittee today. On Monday, September 27th, there's going to be a meeting of the Treatment Subcommittee. Issues around treatment of the community house, Page Smith Community House, that's out at Highway 1 and Highway 9. At 5:30, at a meeting I will probably be at on September 27th, there's going to be a meeting of the Legal Subcommittee at the Java House. And I believe there is still one more committee meeting, noon on the 27th, at the Downtown Association headquarters on Pacific Street at 1347 Pacific. There's a meeting of the Outreach Committee. Now, all this sounds pretty dry and pretty pointless, and of course that's one of the problems of such of the task force, or the task force as I call it. To the public, this needs to have masses of homeless people coming in and making demands as to what they need now. And homeless people are just not coming to these meetings. And when they do come, they're being ignored, they're being sidelined, they're being shut up. And it's actually ironic, because the people that are shutting them up are good people who are activists in their own right, who, if they were in a different structure, if they were in a different process, if they were doing something where they didn't feel like they had to, you know, make one bow to the city and one bow to the city manager and another bow to the mayor, they would be behaving, you know, in a far more aggressive, sensible fashion, trying to get homeless rights and homeless needs met. I'm talking about our chair. Linda LeMaster is the chair, and she's a woman who's articulate. She's a Free Radio Santa Cruz